The downside to this job is that if it turns out the potions are poisoned, they will only pay a few copper. The poison isn't useful on weapons, apparently.
Dale nodded happily. This was a good chance at some cash.
I have a request from Evan, that we look for a new area that may be appearing. Apparently, precious metals and minerals are becoming rarer. He thinks it is a sign that a new mining area will be appearing. If so, we may have steady work as escorts.
The others seemed happy enough with this knowledge, so Dale sighed in relief. He really wanted to help out his friend.
I've got one, Hans chuckled. Oh, look, it's snowing.
The others looked around. It was indeed snowing, a light dusting that Dale knew was deceptively pretty. They would soon be digging tunnels through the snow if they wanted to enter the dungeon.
Back to the request. It seems that the new residents are having trouble adjusting to the climate here.
Hans chuckled again.
He meant that the nobles from warmer areas were nearly freezing to death.
There is a request for fur, specifically warm rabbit fur. Lots of it. Apparently, they want to not only clothe themselves, they want to carpet the floors, walls, and ceilings of their rooms, and they are going to pay pretty well for it.
I have not heard of this request, Tom interjected indignantly. I have been following the job boards carefully, and have seen nothing of the sort. Where didst thou come by this information?
I hear things, Hans replied nonchalantly. Also, there is a big demand for cloaks made from a single pelt, so if we can kill Rail without damaging his fur, we can start making some serious money.
So, we know what our goal is today?
Dale looked around at the cheerful faces and felt his own spirit become a bit lighter.
Money! Came the response. Then let's go!
18.
Goblins? That's new. I wonder what they want.
Back off a little, Danny. We can always slaughter them if they start making threatening moves.
Cal, they are goblins. It doesn't matter what they want. We can't trust them.
Danny snarled at me mentally.
I think you are taking on a bit of the cat's ferocity, Danny. Back away and let them in, I ordered sternly.
I almost never used a tone like that toward her, so the shock of it made her listen. She stepped away and sat down, still growling softly. The goblin standing nearest the entrance stepped cautiously into the room. His eyes kept flicking between the sitting cat and the river next to him.
Oh, right. Yeah, this was obviously a him. His clothing consisted of a few rags wrapped over his shoulders, a belt, and a wrap on his feet. It seemed his thirst overcame him because he squatted next to the river and took a deep drink. He shuddered in pleasure, then stood up with shining eyes and said something into the hole. More goblins started filtering in, and all of them drank as soon as they could get close to the water without angering the massive cat hovering nearby.
Why are they acting like this?
Danny was no longer angry, just very puzzled.
They should be terrified of me, or trying to fight me.
Maybe they are dehydrated?
I offered tenuously. She snorted, causing one of the smaller goblins to startle and trip, looking at her in terror.
These are goblins, Cal.
She informed me as if I hadn't heard her the first time.
I think them being a bit thirsty is the least of our worries. Wait. They're addicted. Cal, they are addicted to the essence-infused water. We did it!
Just then, a wizened old goblin wearing furs of a higher quality waddled to the water. After drinking a hefty amount, he turned and looked at the cat, grunting as his hands began to move. Soon he was dancing in place lightly, and I felt a buildup of essence.
Danny, look out! I think he is using an incantation, I warned her.
She crouched and growled, but he didn't stop. There was a discharge of essence after a moment, but there was no visible effect. I was about to ask Danny what had happened when the goblin started speaking again.
This time, something was different. I could clearly understand what he was trying to say.
Great spirit of the dungeon, hear me,
the dancing goblin sang, chanted.
We have felt your call and have tasted the power you have given freely to those who wish it. The water of strength has made us powerful enough to revolt against our former masters. Those who had become reliant on our compliance. We offer ourselves and our children to you. All we ask in return is enough power to defend ourselves from those who would again attempt to destroy us or force us into servitude again. If this is acceptable, we offer our oaths to you freely,
the goblin sang in a guttural voice. Now, this is not what he said, but what he meant. He was simply not able to shape his mouth enough to say the words, making me wonder if other races saw them as unintelligent simply because they were hard to understand. The words that actually left his mouth were closer to this.
Big angry spirit, you water make us strong. We kill lazy humans, let guard down. You let us live here, make us strong. All our clan kill only for you. You no let people hurt us. Deals?
Danny couldn't hear the meaning, only the words, so she had no idea why I responded as I did. Many of you will die, day after day. I can make your clan large, strong, and numerous, but you will need to fight for survival almost every day. Do you still want to live here? I questioned the goblin shaman. That is almost certainly what he had to be. He seemed surprised to get a response, and a grin only a mother could love appeared on his face.
Abyss, yes!
Did he just say hell yeah? What is going on? What does that even mean?
Danny growled.
Getting some ready-made mobs, hold on, I told her. Well, what is your name?
He responded with a name that was far too long to say quickly, so my response was, Bob it is, then. That is your new name. May you wear it well. Bob, I accept your oath and will do my best to honor it. I will do what I can to make you all strong for as long as you honor your end of the bargain. Bob nodded and motioned the others forward. Apparently, only a dozen or so goblins had survived the journey to get here, let alone the uprising, and they were quite ragged. One by one, they sank to a knee and gave the same oath, and I responded in kind. Every one of them seemed surprised to get a response, but after their oath was given, a line of their aura mingled with mine, giving me direct access to their minds.
"Well, Danny, I think we found our third-floor mobs," I chattered happily.
"Cal, they stink, they are messy, and don't you think they are a little too intelligent to be something you will willingly sacrifice?"
Danny had flown back to me, and the goblins were now setting up a small camp on the fourth floor while they waited for instructions.
"Nah, they made their choice in life. I won't use them for runic experiments, but I did say I would make them stronger. Their average ranking is mid-F, so a little boosting is in order. If I had hands, I would be rubbing them together in anticipation."
"I never thought I would feel bad for goblins,"
Danny muttered quietly. I almost didn't hear her, but I still chose to ignore her barbed comment. I began working on the third floor. Now that I had an idea of what would be living there, I could add features and details instead of living the area as an empty room. To begin, I grew a series of columns in the area, not all the way to the ceiling, but about 8 feet tall. I widened these until they were about 4 feet around and made what looked like worked stone grow between them. This gave an interior area of roughly 4,000 square feet, which should be plenty of space for a dozen goblins. The worked walls extended out from the dungeon wall, forming half of a hexagon. The walls of the dungeon behind the fortifications would have a higher quality of minerals in them waiting for miners. I repeated this pattern several times, creating walled areas along this dungeon floor. There was roughly a minute's walk between each of them, allowing plenty of space for people to walk past and ignore the mobs of this level. If they'd rather go straight for the boss and ignore the mining operations, fine by me. I made a similar wall around the exit from this floor, but far more elaborate and grand. This would be where the floor boss lived, protecting the entrance to the next level. It took several days to complete the basic layout, and I heard Dale try to question me a few times as well. I ignored him and only responded to Danny in grunts or short 1-to-2-word comments. I maintained the current stair system, bypassing this floor until I could make it to a viable level. The final result looked like a spacious beehive from above, according to Danny. I turned my attention to where the goblins were resting fitfully and studied what they were using for a sleeping system. They were cluttered together, several to a, let's graciously call it a tent. That wouldn't do at all for my dungeon. It did nothing to help them or intimidate adventurers. While I was studying them, I noticed what Danny had been talking about. They stunk. I was unsure if it was due to them not having access to bathing supplies or if it was personal preference, but that would not do. I resolved to wait until the shaman awoke to discuss how they wanted their homes to look. I needed to solve the stink. Looking at one of the honeycomb fortifications above the river, I modified the layout a bit. I shrunk the walls and made stairs up them and created terraces about 2 feet deep. These empty spaces I staggered, placing them a few feet lower than the one before it. I then worked to create a few runes on the floor that would collect ambient heat and pour it into whatever medium I wished. Some warrior with more money than brains had fallen and dropped a flaming sword. A flaming sword! It was ridiculous! Holding a shining sword in front of his eyes while in a dark dungeon had destroyed his night vision. From there, he was easy pickings for my bashers. I did appreciate the new runes, though. To my point, I placed these runes along the floor of the top level, activating them with just a touch of essence. Then I diverted a bit of the river from its flow, allowing it to gently flow into the room. It hit the floor and turned to steam with a hiss. Alrighty then, a bit less essence in the fire rune. I adjusted the heat and soon had a massive, multi-tiered bath. The water that entered at the top was the hottest and flowed down into the next level. There it cooled a bit and eventually overflowed to the next level, and so on. At the very bottom it drained, returning to the river. I planted soapleaf bushes on the dividers. I was glad I finally had a use for these. Even the greediest adventurers usually left them alone in the garden room. What else? What else? Food? Most likely. But what do goblins eat? I looked back at their supplies and tried to find food, but I couldn't find anything that resembled edibles. Uh-oh. Danny? What have they been eating? I was worried that I already knew the answer. Danny scoffed at me.
Oh, now you are paying attention to me? I don't know. I've just been making sure they don't sneak in here and kill us.
So they haven't been able to eat rabbits or anything? My stressed tone alerted Danny that something was wrong.
No, I haven't seen them eat anything. Oh.
Danny made the same realization that I had. I woke up the shaman with a nudge to his mind. Where are your food supplies? I didn't bother to let him talk. He simply connected with me through our bond and thought his answer at me.
Great Spirit, we have continued our multi-week fast. We attempted to gather food, but your guardian made it clear that we were being tested on our resolve. We have eaten nothing since entering your depths, and only what we could scrounge in the weeks prior.
He seemed proud of this, instead of horrified as I was.
I see. Good work so far. Your endurance is astounding. Allow me to reward you for your efforts. What do you eat?
Anything we are allowed to. Shaman Bob informed me seriously, reminding me that their entire race was enslaved.
Right. What do you like to eat? Meats? Vegetables? Is there anything dangerous for you to eat?
We prefer meat when we can get it. Cooked, unlike what others think of us. We eat vegetables, though not many if we can avoid it. The orc blood in us does not do well with green foods. While they reduce our hunger, our body does not process it, and there is no gain on our part unless we are in dire need of pooping.
Very informative, thanks. Listen, wake up your people and leave everything behind. I will direct you to your new home.
A look equal parts glee and worry crossed his features as he moved to do my bidding. In a short time, the others were gathered and began walking, following a line of glow potion. They walked until they found the entrance I had made just for them and ascended into their new lair. They looked around the dim room, which to their large eyes was as bright as daylight to humans. I had temporarily raised a small dais, a table, and covered it in steaming meats. Since I could make whole rabbits, I could make just portions of them as well. There was far more meat on the table than they could eat, though they certainly tried. Their mouths had mostly sharp teeth and no molars. The shape of them was wrong, a bit too wide for their heads, so they regularly spilled and dropped food while chewing. This is a race hated and enslaved by almost all the others in the world, mainly because they are considered unintelligent and ill-mannered. I saw a race that tried to survive, even against all the odds stacked against them. When they had finished eating, most of them began to doze off, bellies full for the first time in, apparently, weeks. While I wanted them to sleep, I had something else to do first. Bob began prodding them, getting them moving to the area I had designated as the bath. They grumpily climbed the stairs, but upon seeing the gargantuan area designed as a bathhouse, they all had the same reaction. They would pause, stare, look around for someone planning to beat them for disturbing the beautiful scene, then finally strip and charge into the water with a whoop. I guess everyone likes hot baths. The soap leaf bushes were soon tested, as the goblins scrubbed themselves thoroughly. I absorbed all of the ragged furs and makeshift weapons. It was even more low quality than I had first assumed. I had placed robes in piles nearby for when they all eventually left the bath, the last one an hour after entering. They dressed, feeling very comfortable for what may have been the first time in their lives. I wanted to make armor and weapons for them, but they needed to recover and become strong first. Anything I gave them now would be useless in a week, since they were currently skeletally thin. "Bob, I've been giving some thought on how to proceed," I told him, waking him from a light doze. He shook himself and sat in a meditative pose.
"Yes, Great Spirit, what are your wishes?"
"First off, call me Cal. That is my name," I demanded. This Great Spirit business was getting tedious.
"Yes, Cal," he murmured reverently.
"What do you know of memory stones?" He had no idea what they were, so I talked with Danny and came up with a plan. We would attempt to store the entirety of the goblins' memories in a memory stone before working on altering their bodies. When asked for someone to test the idea on, Bob cheerfully offered a goblin to me that the others barely tolerated. Apparently he was somewhat lazy and complained too often. The goblin in question was napping and had to be kicked several times by Bob before he could be considered awake enough to consent to the idea. I think that Bob was less than truthful about some aspects of the upcoming process, but oh well. I had formed a memory stone that was roughly the same size as the one that had once contained the cultivation technique I stole from Dale. That one had stored roughly 10 years' worth of deep thoughts and concepts, so I figured that it would be ideal for the less complex ideas and tedium that made up this goblin's life. I was a bit nervous. This was the first potentially working artifact that I had made, which was originally made with mana. If it worked as I hoped it would be the proof of concept that I needed for other, stronger workings. The lazy goblin picked it up and made as to eat it. Luckily, Bob slapped it out of his hand and yelled at him. Really, this stone was as big as his fist. I have no idea how he thought he could swallow it. He raised it to his head and held it there, face screwed up in concentration. He didn't need to concentrate on anything in particular, but I think it made him feel better. The stone was designed to draw in memories, and this one was only set to stop drawing after it had everything that was coherent. No baby memories, but
but plenty of them from child to adult to now. I really expected the stone to leave him as a brain-dead lump of flesh, but the goblin was only a bit dazed when it was finished. He handed the stone to Bob and wandered away to resume his nap.
"It worked, Danny," I exulted in this small victory.
The stone swirling with silvery light meant that I could reproduce mana-forged items without having mana myself. I had examined the goblin while the process was running, learning his aura and pattern. I began to remake the body when I had a thought, and stopped. A ball of meat and blood plopped to the ground with a wet smack.
"Gross."
Danny looked at the half-formed mass of tissue.
"I am happy for you."
"Yeah, sorry about that. I figured that I should try and make improvements while I can. I'm not going to do that in here, though. That may freak them out a bit. To the experimentation room!" My focus was instantly there, while Danny had to zip along the tunnels to join in the process. I always offered to share my thoughts, but she felt that seeing it for herself was important, like my thoughts were biased or something. I was examining the pattern and making small noises of disgust as I did so. Danny grunted and told me,
"Oh, just tell me what the problem is already."
I waved her down.
"It's like this is the pattern from a brand new dungeon just learning how to make things. If goblins have a natural lifespan of 30 years, I will be surprised."
A quick conversation with the wizened old goblin, Bob, convinced me I was correct. He was 28 human years old.
"It is all wrong. I can fix this bit here by reducing bone thickness a bit. That will allow them to open and close their jaws without issue. I'll increase bone density here in the spine. That had a similar structure to what I would assume an elf would have, and their feet are too narrow for their weight because of it. I bet they trip for just no reason whatsoever."
I continued further, decreasing thickness and length of the tongue a bit, increasing or decreasing bone density, and making the nerves and blood vessels intertwine and flow in a more natural fashion. I have no idea how these creatures manage to survive at all, let alone become a large race. Their entire life cycle seemed designed around breeding and fighting, both of which they did inefficiently. Sure, they may have had lots of children, but from the looks of it, they only did the deed as a biological impetus. It was something that had to be done. They didn't even particularly enjoy it. After all the reworking of the pattern, I began producing the dungeon goblin as an actual creature. The body formed easier than the original would have. The kinks and inefficient meridians replaced were smoothed. Essence would flow through his body at least as easily as it did through humans' bodies. The mindless mob in front of me sat down, drooling a bit. Well then. I almost called Bob before remembering that I wanted to boost them, not just fix the wreck of their bodies. How to begin, though? Goblins had as much affinity for essence as the other intelligent races, but what would be the right one for... Right. They should have an open affinity channel. I checked his open meridians and found that he had the makings of a powerful warrior. His body had open channels for earth and fire essence, whereas those were blocked in the original. If I infused his body with earth corruption subtly, his overall density and defense would be naturally higher. Thick skin and whatnot. I also allowed a bit more fire into his blood, which should allow for a short temper and plenty of battle rage. I only added a little. These guys would be armed, armored, and intelligent. They didn't need the same influx of corruption to make them into viable fighters as my bashers did. I put a simple set of clothes on him and directed Bob to the room with the memory stone. He came willingly, but stopped in the entryway as he looked at the being in front of him with shock.
"What is that?" he whispered.
Well, what he meant to whisper anyway.
"That good old Bob is what goblins should have been. A powerful, strong, intelligent, decent-looking mix of the races. This is the opposite of what your bodies currently are. Right now, they are a mix of the races that has all the weaknesses of each and none of the strengths. This is the mix of races with all of the strengths and the weaknesses tossed away."
I was, I hope understandably, proud of the result.
"I'm not trying to be insensitive, but as you are now, you are pretty useless, weak, unbalanced, essence inefficient. I've tried to fix that."
Bob looked understandably disturbed and intrigued. "The last step, Bob, is to place the stone against his head and give him memories. Otherwise, he is less than an hour old in an adult body. Bob nodded and stepped forward, transferring the stored memories into the new body. The eyes focused, the muscles twitched, and after a few moments, my new dungeon goblin looked at Bob and asked a question. He stopped mid-sentence, opening and closing his jaw a few times. His eyes opened wide and he stood up, nearly falling over due to the new body's balance being different. It took a few minutes of practice, but he was soon running around, jumping, and speaking almost non-stop. Gone was the previous slurring and hissing, and he strode around with proud, confident steps. He now stood half again as tall as Bob, who was admittedly a shorter specimen. At 5 feet tall, my new warrior mob would easily be the tallest of the new dungeon goblin race. They made their way to the remaining goblins, who reacted in a much different manner than Bob had. The females looked at the goblin warrior with heat in their eyes, while the males looked at him with something akin to hero worship. He walked over to his progenitor, examining him from the outside. He didn't have nice things to say. Ah, well. When you are suddenly far stronger, taller, more powerful, and have a greater capacity for intelligence than you used to, you may look back on your old self as a pathetic version. A bit harsh, though. I asked the others to undergo the same process, and soon they were lined up so I could perfectly memorize their individual patterns. I made a memory stone for each of them, and got to work. This time, the creation went faster, as I had a template to work from. There were deviations to consider, such as gender, but overall the bodies ended up fairly similar to each other. Then, it was Bob's turn. The differences in his pattern were obvious as soon as I began examining him deeply. His cranium had more room in it, allowing his brain to develop more fully than the others had to this point. The new goblins would be his current intellectual equivalent eventually, but he would have a head start in nearly every aspect but muscle density. I could fix that. I increased his body mass, making him significantly larger and tougher than the others. He had a powerful connection to his wind affinity, and his new form also opened the way for an infernal affinity that would be nearly as strong. What would that combination create? I was looking forward to finding out as he developed it. Bob walked up to his new form, pressing his memory stone against the newly formed flesh. The stone dulled for a moment, but just like the others, it retained a copy of the memories. I had them place the stones into a specially designed chest, which I then sank into the ground. I would keep it safe, just in case they all died simultaneously. This was just the beginning for the group. Each of the half-hexagon areas would be a home for a copy of the group, as I planned to recreate the group multiple times. It may be strange for them to see copies of themselves running around, but that was just too dang bad. I waited until this group had full control of their muscles before opening the floor, letting them get used to their new and improved bodies for a few days. Then I had them restore their memories in a new stone. By pulling memories from that set of stones, I filled the new floor of the dungeon with a dozen groups of a dozen, 144 new goblins, to be precise. There were still the originals, but I decided to keep them out of combat if possible, so I didn't count them toward the dungeon mob total for the floor. I would let them live out their lives in as much peace and luxury as possible, and add those memories to the stones so that I was never asked for vacation time. Next up, I wanted a boss for this floor, but none of them had the necessary build or willpower to be a strong boss. I turned to ask Danny her opinion, when it struck me. Danny. She had been getting more vicious and bloodthirsty through her training with the mobs in here. Why not see if she could pilot a meat puppet that had no will of its own? Hey, Danny? Danny looked at me with a critical eye.
You only use that tone when you're about to do something I don't like. What is it this time?
I grinned. Actually, I think you will like this. How would you like to be the third floor boss?
It sounds interesting. Explain.
I told her my plan, and she agreed on the condition that she got to help me design its body, weapons, and armor. Of course I agreed. Why not? We started on the project, working out the kinks and having minor arguments. I wanted an agile fighter that could weave around attacks and counter easily, whereas she was adamant that that type of boss already existed with Snowball on the third floor. She wanted a huge, muscle-bound, heavily armored female goblin that used enchanted weapons. I argued for cursed items, because the adventurers would be warier of using them if they took them from her. She agreed, albeit reluctantly. She seemed to think that the item would trap her in the body, or attempt to draw her into the weapon. I assured her that at the first sign of trouble, I would turn the item to goop. The new boss was placed in the final half-hex, as I was now calling the goblin encampments, on a throne. It was mindless, so it just sat there unmoving until Danny flew in and took control.
Oh, wow! This is so much easier than sharing a body!
Danny spoke with the boss's mouth, the first time that she had not communicated with me mind-to-mind while inhabiting a mob. She tested that functionality, and we found that we could still speak that way, which would make fighting easier.
I want minions.
I snorted a quick chuckle. Are you serious?
Yep.
Wasn't the whole point of this floor to be easier than floor number 4? I carefully asked. She had an odd glint to her that spoke of a bit too much excitement.
Well then make the 4th floor harder,
she demanded with a laugh.
You did design it as the 3rd floor after all.
Thinking about the situation carefully, I decided that she was correct.
All right, I'll give you whatever you want, but I'm opening the 3rd floor tomorrow morning.
Perfect.
Danny put me straight to work. Dale. You're looking good, Dale. Hans was looking at his friend and team leader with a critical eye. I know you haven't been getting enough sleep, and you've been training like you think assassins are after you. What's different? Dale shrugged at him with a grin.
Hey, it isn't paranoia if they are actually out to get you. Nah, I guess the voices in my head just haven't been bothering me this week.
Hans laughed, and they walked toward the training ground. They were out today to see if Dale had learned anything from the Dark Elves, since Hans was not just going to accept Dale's word on it. They got to the arena and did a few warm-ups, stretching and preparing themselves in the pre-dawn light.
I hear there is a lady after you these days, Hans coyly said. You sly dog.
Ugh, I have no wish to see her again. She seems to deify the dungeon and has been making all sorts of wild claims.
Dale shook his head and faced Hans. You ready? Hans pondered a moment.
I don't think you should dismiss her so easily. She is known as the foremost expert of dungeon lore in the known world. Not only that, but she went for years without an influx of essence. She has had to develop techniques and ways to be ultra-efficient with her essence and mana use. I bet she could teach you a thing or two.
He ruined the seriousness of his words by waggling his eyebrows at the last words.
You know that I thought she was a prostitute?
Dale asked his lecherous buddy.
Hans shrugged. Happens to the best of us. Sometimes they seem far too amazing to be real, so you make a false assumption. At least you didn't tell her that you...
You did, didn't you?
Dale nodded. Hans started laughing.
You had better go fix that relationship before she murders you.
I'm not going to... Dale leaned to the side, missing Hans's punch only by a scant inch.
Apparently we're fighting now.
Hans didn't answer with more than a grin. He began attacking faster, slowly ramping up the difficulty until Dale actually broke out into a sweat. Dale tried to find an opening to attack, but Hans moved with a precision and economy of movement that left no noticeable opportunities. Soon, Dale was dodging with less and less space between his body and Hans's fists. Finally, it was all he could do not to cry out with pain as Hans pounded him into the dirt with well-played blows.
"You are certainly learning, and frankly you are doing well," Hans nodded and offered his hand to Dale.
"You just need another decade of fighting experience or so."
Also,
he had pulled Dale halfway up, and now he let him fall to the ground with an oomph.
"You are too trusting. We are fighting, remember?"
Rude. Dale rocked his body until he had enough momentum to stand. He was trying to learn a faster movement to regain his feet, since his dark elf trainer beat him mercilessly with the stout staff whenever he was on the ground. You about ready to head to the dungeon? Laying on the snow really isn't my favorite way to start the day. I could really go for some movement to warm me up. Winter had arrived, at least the leading edge. A thin layer of snow was all that covered the ground, though not from lack of snowing. No, the wind had simply risen to new strength, blasting the snow off the mountain unless something blocked it. Less people were living here now. More and more were paying the fee to use the portal and live somewhere less tolerant of life. People said they hated it. It felt haunted, or it was the worst climate in the world. For Dale, it just felt like home.
I'm ready. But do you think everyone else will be there?
Hans gave Dale a significant look.
I'm not going to force her out into the cold again. That's your problem now, oh great team leader.
Rose had been rather resistant to venturing out into the cold air. To be fair, they had to be careful about how many layers they wore. There was a person that had been too bundled up in loose robes and layers to the point that the wind had caught on him like a sail and blown him off the mountain. They still hadn't found his body. Now, people were trying to see how few clothes they could wear and how tightly fit they could be before they started to succumb to the cold. Businessmen no longer hawked their wares. If you needed something, you came to them through their triple-layered tents.
Hans, you're the one that is trying to win her over. If you can't deal with her at her coldest, you shouldn't get her at her.
They came upon their meeting point just then, and the other members had obviously been there a few minutes.
Oh, thank goodness! Let's go!
A shivering Rose ran off toward the dungeon entrance. Adam was shivering so hard in his robes that he couldn't speak, while Tom wore his sparse armor and looked completely normal. His nipples were unpleasantly puckered, though, and Hans pretended he had to dodge them like a knife whenever Tom turned. Tom grinned at Dale.
I see that you would do well in the Wolf Kingdom. This is a nice warm day back home.
Dale replied in kind.
It's about time the temperature gets back to normal. I've been melting for months. Look at me. The heat reduced me to skin and bones. With this temperature, I'm finally able to start getting some muscle back.
The others, not invited to the bragging, groaned good-naturedly. The two laughing men had been having the same conversation every time they met up since the first snowfall.
Hans,
Rose was squinting at Tom against the wind.
Can you teach me a good assassination technique?
Tom had a small look of panic on his face.
Let us not be hasty. We will soon warm ourselves in the fiery blood of our foes.
Adam ground out through his chattering teeth.
Maybe you stop bathing in blood and just take a normal bath?
Winter had started to impact the hygiene of most people that stayed here full time. They got to the entrance of the dungeon and stepped inside, happy to be out of the worst of the wind. Dale looked around.
Any new jobs?
Hans grunted.
More requests for fur. No real surprise there.
The others sighed. While fur was moderately lucrative, it was smelly, messy, tedious work. It slowed them down to skin each animal they felled, and so had taken to tossing the entire animal into their dimensional bags. This had the distinct disadvantage of weighing them down more, but added a small benefit of being able to export meat easily. Basher was now considered a delicacy in the kingdoms, as it retained quite a bit of essence in the meat. If you had the correct meridian open, eating basher meat allowed you to almost passively gain essence. It was a great training aid.
Anyone else? Please?
Dale had just a touch of desperation in his voice. Adam spoke up.
Healing potions and herbs are on the rise again. There have been more attacks recently. From what I hear, entire villages in the south are vanishing overnight, while the same is happening in the north, just with the bodies being left where they fall.
Dale nodded. The gossip had been growing as more nobles began appearing, coming to live semi-permanently. No longer was it just the second or third son of a branch family. Now firstborn and mainline nobles had been arriving.
Mountaindale, as his rapidly growing town had been laughingly dubbed, was the only place that was out of the way and remote while still being a viable training ground.
So let's start. I'll take point position. I want Tom on my left, Rose on my right. Adam, you are right behind me. Hans, take rear guard. Watch our backs.
They proceeded into the dungeon, doing their best to silently kill as many bashers as they could. Recently, if they had been able to sneak up on them, they didn't swarm. People were taking that to mean they were getting stealthier. But Dale had a different idea. He was still hearing mutterings and words from Cal that meant nothing to him, like ossification. Dale knew that the dungeon was just distracted, and he assumed that without the dungeon guiding them, the bashers were just less likely to attack people. He was fine with this. Hopefully it meant that he would have a more normal experience while fighting. They snuck up on a group of bashers and began beating them quickly. Dale had found that grabbing one with his offhand and hitting it with his cursed battle gauntlet would almost always kill it. He also didn't hurt himself when he did this, as apparently the essence released into the gauntlet would just flow back into his center if he struck his arm or hand. Luckily for him, since he had found this out by accidentally scratching himself in a sensitive area when he had been startled by a sneak attack from a basher, the activated knuckles had left a scrape where he had moved his hand too quickly, but the blood hadn't been blasted away from that point.
What the?
Hans had turned a corner and was shaking his head, half in disgust and half in laughter.
Someone has a sick sense of humor.
They took a look. There appeared to be a high elf made of stone on a marble altar, surrounded by statues of bunnies playing in flowers. Dale choked on a laugh.
Wow. I mean, yeah, she was insane, but it is still sad that she just let herself die for no reason.
Hans glared at Dale.
If I die in here, and you find a statue of me, you'd better smash that shit, especially if it is surrounded by bunnies and flowers.
I'd rather take it to the capital and have it immortalized in their history museum. Dale started walking deeper into the dungeon as Hans let out a squawk of rage. Rose looked back at the statue as they passed it.
I wonder who would do something like that.
Pay attention, Rose. There is a roving squad ahead, Dale quietly admonished her.
Roving squads were groups of regular or advanced bashers that didn't stay in a certain area. They weren't usually too dangerous, but they sometimes came up behind groups as they were focused on killing a group ahead of them. Dale jumped forward, backhanding a basher as it squeaked the alert. Its head was almost torn off from the combination of the blow and pressurized blood at the impact point. Tom stepped forward, landing a blow with a small hammer. Hans had been training him and decided that the essence he cultivated in a day didn't justify the use of his powerful warhammer. Since it took essence constantly when in use, Tom had no argument to defend himself. Now that he was using a square ingot of iron on a stick, calling it a hammer was really a bit misleading. Tom was much slower with these ingot hammers, but they helped to train his muscles and aim. So what if he grunted every time he swung? They finished off the near helpless, at this to this group, bashers, and were putting the bodies in their bags when they heard a roar from ahead. Tom shook his head and limbered up his arms.
It appears someone has spawned a glade in the garden room. Shall we assist them?
A scream filtered down the tunnel to them.
Let's hurry. It sounds like they aren't doing well.
Dale started moving faster, rushing toward the sounds of scuffles ahead. They burst into the garden room to see an armored man standing protectively over another man who cowered on the floor. The group rushed in toward the glade, and Dale started beating the overgrown mushroom in an almost rhythmic pattern. Since they had found that this type of enemy took little direct damage from non-sharpened weapons, Dale was not hitting it squarely, but rather near the edges so he could tear off chunks of the mob. An arrow from Rose punched all the way through the mob as it turned on them, leaving a rapidly closing hole in its wake. Hans began lopping off pieces of the monster, and soon it was too damaged to remain upright. It collapsed to the ground, dead, and Dale turned toward the two people that they had rescued.
Just two of you? Can either of you even fight? I've made sure that everyone that enters here knows the dangers of the known levels. Why the abyss would you be here?
Dale roared, at the two-person group. 19. The armored figure raised his visor, revealing Evan.
Well, you know me, Dale. I see a person in trouble or someone doing something incredibly stupid.
Here he glared at the man he was protecting.
And I just need to try to save their dumb ass.
Oh, hey, Evan. Good to see you. Wait, we heard a woman scream. Did you see what happened to her?
Dale was trying to look through the thick growth in the room. Evan snorted, trying to cover a laugh.
Yup, that's him.
He jerked a finger at the man who was now standing up.
I am not a woman. Of course I have read the warnings, but I expected them to be greatly exaggerated. The price of parts from Glade has doubled in the past few weeks.
The fussy man was worriedly looking at a new hole in his pants.
Ah! You are the alchemist!
Adam remarked in an accusatory tone. Adam was the one who normally brought herbs and other items to the alchemist and apothecary.
Why in the world would you come down here?
The alchemist took up a self-righteous pose.
Well, if you thought people were swindling you with product, wouldn't you want to see the production yourself?
Evan made a sound deep in his throat.
I walked in to see him kicking plants and throwing rocks at trees. He must have been at it a while, 'cause he wasn't very effective.
His comment made the fussy man blush.
I take it you are satisfied? Dale dryly drawled. Or would you like to wake up another flesh-eating monster?
Well, I suppose I'll have to be satisfied, won't I?
The man turned and walked out of the room, somehow making even that motion into a study of pompousness.
Ugh, Hans grunted.
Adam, how do you deal with that man? His face is just so punchable.
Adam shrugged.
He gives us a lot of money.
Hans thought silently for a moment.
That would do it. He turned to Evan. Now as for you, do you need an escort out or something?
Evan shuffled his feet.
I was actually hoping to follow you this morning. I don't know if Dale mentioned my offer.
Dale nodded at him.
I did, but we haven't seen anything different below.
Why do you think there would be changes that you need to be present for?
Well, it's more like this. Are any of you miners?
Head shakes all around.
So you don't know what to look for? Here's the deal. Last night I hit a critical point. The ore and material on this floor is not rare enough or high enough quality for me to be able to make my payment on time unless I work at least 20 hours a day. I have a hunch that I'll find what I need deeper inside. Also, I like sleep.
There was a brief conversation, but most of the team was fine with him coming along if he accepted that the risks were on his shoulders. Plus, Evan certainly had a likable quality about him that resonated well with the group. He was a no-nonsense, hard-working, driven individual. Before continuing, they debated fighting the remaining Glade mobs, but everyone was more interested in continuing downward and cultivating than wasting time on the upper levels. They skirted the majority of the garden room, and after a few minutes of walking, made it to the tunnel connecting to the next room. So far they were making good time, having only been in the dungeon for about 15 minutes, and already making it through the second room. They wandered through the tunnel, laughing at Evan as he cussed at traps that startled him, such as a rockfall.
To be fair, he had more reason to fear collapsing tunnels than they did.
They started competing with each other to show off their knowledge of the dungeon, though Rose won when she leaned onto Evan, then reached out and punched the wall. A section crumbled away, revealing a shiny gold-plated chest. Evan's eyes boggled at the small shower of coins they pulled out of the chest and thanked them when they loaded him up on healing potions. Hans laughed, making Evan give him a questioning look. Hans ruined the mood a bit by informing him that the reason they gave the healing potions to him was that he was the most likely to get torn up and be in need of healing. After that point, they stopped showing off and returned to their usual formation, with Evan standing near Adam. Now they were grim and serious again, which only served to make the half-dwarf more cautious. Stepping into the third room was a new experience for Evan, the furthest he had ever traveled in. He looked around at the high ceiling, doing his best to see in the gloom and darkness. Without essence-enhanced vision, he would normally not be able to see at all, but his dwarven ancestry allowed him limited vision. He yelped when the first attack came. There was a sudden rustling of armor and scratches of metal on leather as weapons were drawn and swung. High-pitched squeals came from dying bashers, and a flash of hellfire blazed along a horn before the monster was slain.
"What the abyss is happening?"
Evan was crouched, pick held horizontally in front of him as he looked around wildly at the flashes of light, groans of pain, and shrieks of dying mobs.
"Just..."
Rose fired off an arrow with a thwop.
"Another day in paradise."
The fighting quickly died off, and Evan was assaulted by the odor of animals being skinned. He had to fight not to vomit as the darkness and smells threatened to overwhelm his overwrought senses.
"You're all insane," he muttered, making the others laugh.
This didn't help with his assessment of their mental soundness. A few minutes passed as they dressed the carcasses, storing them in their bags. A glimmer in the distance caught Evan's eye.
"What's over there?"
Adam glanced in the indicated direction.
"Hey! Good eye! Guys, there is a glowing chest over there!"
"Score." Hans started moving in that direction before Dale called him back. Dale was looking at the chest, and something didn't feel right. It took him a moment to realize what the issue was. "Where are the mobs? There's nothing guarding it." This caught the group's collective attention and prompted Hans to move closer to inspect the chest. He stopped a few feet away.
"Trapped. I'm not really sure what this will do, so back up a bit."
He pulled out a heavy knife, throwing it at what he assumed was the activation for the trap. He flipped backward just as the knife impacted, and a blast of superheated vapor blasted from well-hidden holes in a ring around the chest. Anyone nearby would have been boiled in their armor like a lobster if they had been caught in the spray.
"That's a new one," Hans chuckled, stepping forward to inspect the chest again.
As he was setting his foot down, a spike shot upward, intent on skewering him. The spike shattered as it came into contact with his boot, and Hans chuckled.
"Double-trapped. This place is getting dangerous."
Evan was a bit perplexed.
"I'm glad you aren't hurt, but I am wondering, how did you do that?"
"Inscribed boot. I calculated how much force was coming up at me and passed essence into the boot to enhance my downward force by that exact amount. The stone shattered, and luckily my boot did not," Hans commented offhandedly as he threw open the chest.
"Weapons!" The others let out a soft cheer. They didn't want to be too loud. Sound attracted attention.
"Looks like... oh, yes. I think we have a set of demon busters here."
The cheers got a bit louder, and Adam danced a bit.
"Demon busters?"
Evan quietly wondered, feeling like he was missing 80% of the conversation. Tom replied this time.
"'Tis what we have dubbed weapons that are specifically designed to destroy demons. The church pays very well for them, as the inscriptions are very detailed and finicky. For a reproduction of this weapon style, near a year of work would be required. We also will need to assume that these weapons are single-use, as they are intended to be stabbed into their target, who will forthwith be returned to the abyss. A lot of work for this artifact, therefore, a lot of money for us."
"Let's say 3,000 divided by the five of us, 600 gold each," Hans was calling out calculations.
"The six of us, Hans. We had already passed that point, only Evan noticing it brought us back to claim it," Dale admonished his friend.
"No, come on, I have a mage to pay off," Hans whined.
Dale gave him a look.
"And how many weapons are there?"
"Three," Hans muttered sullenly.
Dale did a bit of math in his head.
"Let's round that up to 10,000 gold. That means 15% goes to the city, so we are at 8,500. Then a flat 25% to the guild, so down another 1,275. That leaves us 7,225 gold if we play our cards right. Divided by the six of us, 12 platinum, 4 gold, 16 silver, and 6 copper. If we haggle it correctly, of course. And adjusting for the current rumors,
We could boost the price a solid amount. The others stared at him in shock. What? Rose answered his question.
When did you start doing mathematics in your head like that? That was really impressive.
Oh, Dale looked a little bit embarrassed. You all know that I'm working to be a good little city lord. I've been spending most of my money on memory stones that contain different concepts. I recently purchased the Dwarven Mathematical System, and I guess it is kind of... I don't know. I just need to do math when it comes up like this.
What's the cubed root of 300 times 32 squared? Hans looked at Dale excitedly.
I'm not a jester, Hans. I don't perform tricks.
This made the others laugh, while Hans muttered, I'm never going to figure that out.
Rose looked at Dale with a half-smile on her face.
I had wondered why you insisted on coming in here unarmored. You are welcome for the Greaves, by the way. You're broke, aren't you?
Oh, yes.
Well, so are all of us, just for different reasons. Don't feel bad. Back to work?
Rose prodded them.
They moved to the final room on this floor, killing off the boss squad, and moving to the second floor. Cal.
Dale's group is coming through the second floor right now. They're bringing along a miner.
Danny informed me cheerfully. Now that is some good timing. We just finished up down there, and I want to get back to the other project I've been working on.
I heard Dale sigh as I started talking.
Yes, I still exist, Dale. Don't be rude.
Want me to let you know when they're getting near the third floor?
Danny offered. I gladly accepted. I really wanted to figure out the gate issue. I returned my attention to the problem that the dimensional bag was becoming. I was using the principles it had allowed me to understand in an attempt to make portals that led to each floor. I felt that the system I had in place to contain the energies and direct them should be working. Maybe there was simply an ephemeral quality to mana that I simply couldn't replicate with essence?
Gah! No. I couldn't think like that. If I could just figure out why punching into a pocket dimension like this was making it so hard for me to... Wait a second. That explains my issue. I was trying to extrapolate the same pattern for an extra-dimensional bag and use it to allow intra-dimensional travel. I wasn't trying to break out of this dimension. I needed to connect two points so I could allow things to move between those points in the same dimension. I wrapped my mind around this concept and formulated a plan. If I understood the issue correctly, what I needed to do was to set up a gate that matched another perfectly. Then I could connect those two by setting up a resonance pattern and forcing the essence at the two termini to move at the same time with the same criteria. Essentially, I was planning on inscribing the air by moving essence in a continuous cycle. Then something entering through one gate would find themselves exiting the other. I had just started getting excited and was about to begin working on a model when I was interrupted by my lovely wisp.
Cal, they're fighting Rail, right? They beat Rail.
Have they seen it yet?
I shook myself a bit. Concentrating on breaking physics tended to leave me a bit dizzy. I wasn't sure how other people did it, but if my concept worked, it would be a bit paradoxical. It would be a gate that contained the other gate, which contained itself. The set of all sets that contains itself. It exists. I just need to prove it.
They haven't. I think it is only a matter of time now. They are looking at the chest. The miner is looking and scratching at the walls, and Dale is doing his customary double check of the Silverwood tree. Wave at Dale!
Danny laughed as Dale's face peeked into view high above. Dale put on a strange expression, so I focused on his side of the conversation.
I think there is another floor again.
Dale saying this brought many more faces into view through my sunroof.
Looks like. You think this floor will be as insanely difficult as that little maze?
Hans chipperly input. Little maze? I snorted. It's called a labyrinth, hello?
What is this made of?
Evan was trying unsuccessfully to scratch the material they were looking through.
It's tough.
He looked at it closely. The natural light spilling in from above, allowing him to look at it without impediment.
It seems like a pane of nearly perfect clear emerald, but it's huge. I've never seen anything resist my pick either.
It is likely a derivative of cursed earth. I'm betting that it is emerald, but with a large amount of earthen corruption in it.
Rose postulated, gaining the attention of those around her.
Why would it matter if it were emerald or not? Dale asked her.